Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the Voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for the Technology Report and This is America, coming up after As It Is.
Hello, and welcome to As It Is from VOA Learning English. I'm Christopher Cruz in Washington. Today on the program, we report on a recent conference for Ebola survivors. The number of Ebola cases continues to rise, but there is some hope that more people will survive being infected with the virus.
Think about them sometimes. See, I have nightmares in my dreams that you see them, you know, playing with them. Even last night, I had a dream. Yeah, I had a dream. I saw my father, and, you know, I couldn't bear that. Yeah, I wanted to go to him, but he rejected me, said no.
Then we will report on what small organisms in deep sea rocks are doing to help our environment.
These are not just simply end products of methane oxidation, but they actually maintain a viable community of microorganisms living inside the pore spaces of the rock.
Helping survivors of Ebola and the role of tiny deep sea organisms in reducing methane gas in the Earth's atmosphere. Those are our subjects today on As It Is from VOA. The number of Ebola cases continues to rise, but there is some hope for those who survive the disease. Recently, a conference for Ebola survivors was held for the first time in eastern Sierra Leone. Bob Doty has more about the meeting.
The goal was to offer advice to survivors and look at ways they can increase people's understanding of the disease. That music is coming from a small church in Kenema, Sierra Leone. Inside the building, 36 Ebola survivors danced in celebration. All 36 have beaten the deadly virus for which there is no vaccine. Sierra Leone's Ministry of Health and Sanitation organized the Conference of Ebola Survivors. The ministry and non-governmental organizations want them to advise other Ebola patients and teach people more about the disease and its prevention. Matthew Dalling is Chief of Child Protection with UNICEF, the United Nations Children's Fund. He says survivors often face problems when they return to their communities.
They go back into communities and they are ostracized and they're told to leave. One or two survivors I met are renting in Kenema City because they can't go back to their rural villages. So what we want to do is find a way that we can actually get them to go back into the communities, to become helpers and to really make them become advocates and champions. I mean, we really see them as heroes.
Fatmata Feri Musu Sese is a nurse. She became sick with the disease while caring for an Ebola patient who threw up on her. She blames her infection on the light material she was wearing at the time. She says the vomit from the patient's stomach touched her skin. Today, the healthcare worker is happy to be alive. She says she wants to become an activist in her community because some people still do not believe Ebola is real.
There was a rumor that with the nurses, they have given us huge amount of money. We are the one who are killing the people. We inject the people. We kill us.
It is claims like those that Ebola survivor Dauda Mohamed Fula wants to stop. He works as a laboratory technician at the government hospital in Kenema. He has also faced rejection from people because he had Ebola. But for him, the hardest part is that other members of his family also got infected and did not survive.
Think about them sometimes. See, I have nightmares in my dreams. I do see them, you know, playing with them. Even last night, I had a dream. Yeah, I had a dream. I saw my father, and, you know, I couldn't bear that. Yeah, I wanted to go to him, but he rejected me. He said no. So I started crying in my dreams. So I wake up with tears in my eyes.
Sierra Leone's Ministry of Health and Sanitation says the country had 634 Ebola survivors as of October 19th. UNICEF officials say there will be similar conferences planned for survivors across the country. I'm Bob Doty.
You are listening to As It Is on the Voice of America. Methane can come from wetlands, as a byproduct of raising farm animals, and from human activities, such as leakage from natural gas systems. Methane is also plentiful in the ocean. It can be found in ice, but also rises from deep within the earth through small cracks or holes in the ocean floor. Little of that methane reaches the atmosphere thanks to methane-eating organisms that live in seabed sediments, materials that sank to the sea floor. Now, an American scientist says other deep-sea microorganisms are also attacking the gas. As we hear from Ann Ball, these organisms live in an unlikely place, inside rock on the ocean floor.
Victoria Orphan is with the California Institute of Technology. She studies microorganisms that live in sediment near methane vents in the ocean. These vents release methane trapped inside the earth. Ms. Orphan says the organisms have changed to survive in this extreme environment.
These organisms would be able to extract energy from methane using sulfate found in seawater rather than oxygen. And as an end product, they would produce hydrogen sulfide, so this is sort of that rotten egg smell. And also, as another byproduct, these organisms would produce carbonate, sort of like the pavement you see on the sidewalk.
Over time, that calcium carbonate forms tall, rocky seamounts around the methane vents. Victoria Orphan suspected that these rocky areas served as a shelter for sea life. So she found a submersible, a small vehicle like a submarine, and went down 800 meters to the seafloor to prove it. Ms. Orphan made four such trips between 2006 and 2011. As part of her studies, she collected sediments and seamount particles from the near-freezing water. She says the rocks she collected confirmed her theory. The journal Nature Communications published her findings. I'm Ann Ball.
That's our program for today. I hope it has helped you learn everyday American English. I'm Christopher Cruz. I invite you to join us again tomorrow at this same time for another edition of As It Is, here on the Voice of America. The Technology Report is next, followed by This is America. You can read and listen to our programs and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Technology Report. Three-dimensional printers are fast becoming everyday devices in the United States. 3D printers are used to make everything from automobile parts to bone replacements for human patients. American research scientists are now working on creating replacements for living tissue. Researchers at the Medical University of South Carolina have been working on creating and manufacturing living tissue since 2003. This process is called biofabrication. It requires special printing equipment and a special kind of ink. Traditional printers require ink to produce an image or design on a piece of paper. For their 3D printer, the South Carolina researchers prepare complex nutritious solutions they call bioinks. Bioinks are made of proteins and glucose, which normally provides energy for most cells of the body. The researchers also add living cells taken from the animal that will receive the new printed tissue. The bioinks are then added to a device that researchers call the Palmetto Bioprinter. Sarah Grace Dennis is one of the researchers at the Medical University of South Carolina. She says new technology, like the Palmetto Bioprinter, is a great help to the biofabrication process.
When I got here a year ago, we were printing acellular bioinks just to see if patterns could be printed. And now we are printing skeletal muscle replica implants that we've been implanting into rats.
The bioinks are placed in three dispensers, containers, inside the printer. Lasers control both the position of the printing surface and the places where the bioink is released. Michael Yost is a leader of the research team. He says the printing process is fully automated, machine-operated. He says that the Palmetto Bioprinter makes it possible to create complex tissue types.
And with our 3D bioprinter, we've been able to create new microvascular networks that we can then grow new tissues in very key areas such as pancreas, liver, and kidney.
The researchers say bioprinting is still experimental, but they hope in a few years they may be able to print tissue to replace damaged human organs. But there are still concerns with biofabrication. Some scientists worry about how to get blood to the replacement tissue. The flow of blood is important to keeping the printed tissue alive. Michael Yost hopes that more people will believe in the benefits of biofabrication.
Tissue biofabrication is a reality, and it's a reality now. And if you come here and you get to see it and look at it, you'll get to see it. Can't touch it, but you can really see, hey, wait a minute, this is real, and this is really human.
And that's the Technology Report from VOA Learning English. I'm Jonathan Evans.
from VOA Learning English. Welcome to This is America in Special English. I'm Christopher Cruz.
And I'm Kelly Jean Kelly. Today, we meet an American teenager as she celebrates her 15th birthday in the Hispanic tradition of the quinceañera.
Many teenagers in the United States experience a rite of passage, an event signaling the end of childhood. Sometimes this is a celebration to mark a birthday, like the Sweet 16 party for girls. Sometimes the rite of passage is a religious observance, or a cultural or ethnic tradition. Young members of the Jewish religion, for example, study and memorize a part of the Torah. Then, they recite or repeat those religious scriptures for the clergy, their family, and friends in a temple or synagogue. The ceremony for boys is called a bar mitzvah. For girls, it is a bat mitzvah. Also, in some American churches, young people can confirm their Christian beliefs in a religious service.
Some American Indian girls follow tribal customs to mark the beginning of womanhood. One such example is Quinalda, an observance by members of the Navajo tribe. The meaning of the word Quinalda is unclear, but generally it marks and blesses the time when a young woman becomes able to bear children. And some teenage girls, like Julissa Mesa Lopez of Ranson, West Virginia, follow a centuries-old rite of passage marking the 15th birthday. For many girls, the rite means both a religious event and a big party.
Julissa made a big decision about her own rite of passage when she was 14 years old. She decided to celebrate her next birthday with a quinceañera. She made the choice after her parents had offered her other presents, including a first payment towards buying a car. Quince is the Spanish word for 15. A quinceañera marks the 15th birthday. The event is also called quince años, or just quince. The name depends on where you live and the customs of your family. But the celebration of a 15th birthday usually means the same thing in many parts of the world. The 15th birthday marks a goodbye to childhood and the beginning of womanhood. The quinceañera is especially common in countries where Spanish, Portuguese, French, or Creole are spoken. Many thousands of girls in the United States whose ancestors spoke those languages follow this tradition.
In most ways, Julissa lives the life of a typical American teenage girl. She is a second-year student at Jefferson High School in Shenandoah Junction, West Virginia. She gets good grades and likes social studies. Julissa also respects the traditions of her parents. The family is among about 52 million Americans of Hispanic ancestry. Julissa's mother, Kelly Lopez, came to the United States with her family from Honduras in the 1990s. Her father, Julio Mesa, moved here from El Salvador with his family about the same time. The two met and married in the Washington, D.C. area and are longtime United States citizens. But they still have many family members and friends in Central America. Ms. Lopez says she did not have a quinceañera herself. She has two sisters close to her own age. They were settling in the United States about the time when their 15th birthday celebrations took place.
But Julissa had other ideas. Her mother explained how the big party came to be.
Well, we started like maybe a year ago. She really wanted her quinceañera birthday party because it's something that all Toy or her cousins, they did it, and so she really wanted her.
As part of the quinceañera tradition, Julissa completed a year of religious studies at her family's Roman Catholic church. She took part in a ceremony confirming her beliefs, and then she was ready for her celebration.
The family made a list of about 150 relatives and friends to invite. Some of the guests traveled to the party from as far away as Central America. Julissa also invited the boys and girls who would attend to her at the celebration. To help plan for the party, the parents visited a number of possible places to hold the event and made a decision. Julissa's birthday would be celebrated in the ballroom of the Hollywood Casino at Charlestown Races. The family spent time trying to decide what would be served for dinner. Julissa says they made two choices. Chicken was the main meal for some of the guests, but not everybody had that meal.
We did a mix of two different plates for the Spanish side. That was the burrito. They served it with like rice and the steak, tortilla, and they gave us some guacamole and salsa and chips.
When the big day came, a long white limousine arrived to take Julissa and her group of attendants to the party. Six girls wearing violet dresses and six boys in formal tuxedos jumped into the vehicle. Julissa, however, climbed up more slowly. Ruffles on her dress made it harder to enter the limousine. When she finally sat down gracefully, her attendants cheered. Every so often, Julissa and the others stood and pushed their heads out of the limousine's skylight opening. Julissa held onto her tiara, a jeweled headpiece, as the wind tossed her long, dark hair.
In the Hollywood Casino, some guests were already seated at tables. They watched as a professionally made video documented Julissa's young life. Against the background of the song, "Looks Like We Made It," she was shown as a newborn baby in her mother's arms in the hospital. The guests watched as a young Julissa played in the sand and waves at an Atlantic Ocean beach. They saw her at the ceremony for her First Communion, a sacred religious event for Catholics. They talked about her as a baby learning to walk and as a little girl during her first days of school. The video showed Julissa at Disney World, and holding her brother Julian as a baby. She smiled as she stood in front of the family's Christmas tree.
Looks like we made it. Left each other on the way to another love. Looks like we made it.
The limousine dropped the young people at the party, and after a while, a line formed. Julissa and her attendants and family waited at the door. There were ceremonious announcements as they entered the huge party room. After dinner, upbeat music played as a master of ceremonies announced the entry of each guest. As part of the quinceañera ritual, Julissa welcomed the guests at each table, and she received presents. The gift of a doll, for example, represented the last plaything of childhood. A shining pair of silver high-heeled shoes represented the first steps of adulthood. One grandmother presented her with a special heart-shaped quinceañera necklace. The other grandparents presented her with a ring, and her aunt from El Salvador gave her a Bible.
After dinner, Julissa and her attendants performed a dance they had been working on. She looked very grown up as she and her partner went around and around in the center of a circle of dancers. One of the dancers was Julissa's younger brother, Julian, who is 7 years old. He took off his tuxedo jacket and looked like he could stay on the dance floor all night. His mother remembers Julian's pleasure at being included in a dance specially prepared for the party.
He did a special dance for everybody, something that she practiced like the whole time, and he was in it, so he was really excited that he was part of it.
The music got faster for the next dance, which had more complex steps, and before long, the dancers moved to the tables and took new partners. Everyone from young children to old men and women began to whirl around.
Finally, the room grew